यच्छाप्युत्क्रामथीश्वरः गृहीत्वा एतानि संयाति वायुर्गन्धान् इवाशयात्। The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Here the living entity is described as Ishwara, the controller of his own body. If he likes, he can change his body to a higher grade, and if he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change of his body undergoes depends upon him. At the time of death, the consciousness he has created will carry him on to the next type of body. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. We're reading this evening from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15. Herein, Lord Sri Krishna is describing the nature of the individual soul. In the previous verse, he explains, Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manashishtan indriyani prakriti stanikarashati, that the source of life within every living being is spiritual by nature, part and parcel of Krishna, inconceivably one with Krishna and different than Krishna. One in that we have the same essential spiritual properties of God, as the sun ray possesses the same qualitative nature as the sun. But quantitatively, we are infinitesimal. We are just tiny parts of Krishna. And it is because we are tiny parts of Krishna that we have freedom. We have the will to choose within our life. Where there is the will to choose, there is the possibility of real joy in a mood of love and surrender. Because surrender is the quality which makes love so sweet. Real love is an utter surrender of oneself, of all one's energies to the beloved. Surrender of our mind, surrender of our body, surrender of everything that is near and dear to us. That is the expression of love. And for this to be, there must be free will. So the Lord has empowered every living entity with this freedom. And when the living entity chooses to want to enjoy separate from the Supreme Person or Krishna, he is put into this condition of material life. In this material world, everything is accounted for. At every moment, we are making a choice, and at every moment we are responsible for the choice that we make, what we say, what we do. And there is a reaction. For for absolutely everything that takes place in this karmic world. Krishna is explaining here that the mystery of death, which is so difficult even for the greatest philosophers to try to comprehend, is here clearly being explained. Throughout the ages, great thinkers have speculated, what is death? What takes place after death? Some conclude that at the time of death, everything is finished. Others conclude that at the time of death, if you're bad, you go to hell to burn forever. If you're good, you go to heaven to enjoy forever. There are so many ideas. But these principles of truth can never be understood through the ascending process of our own thinking apparatus. Rather, the truth is revealed by the truth himself, or God. There is no other way of understanding the truth except from hearing submissively from the Lord himself. Dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. Krishna is the author of all religion, and no one but the Supreme Lord could enunciate real religious principles. A real teacher, a real sadhu, a real guru is simply one who repeats as a messenger the word of Krishna, without adding, without subtracting. But it is so wonderful that because of the love and the devotion of such a devotee, when he repeats the word of Krishna, it becomes even more sweet than when Krishna originally spoke it. Because it is the same word, with the same power, but with the addition of the sweetness of the love of that devotee's subordinate position before the Lord. So Krishna's here revealing to us very simply and very clearly the mystery of death. People fear death because they do not know what will be after death. Fear is due to ignorance. We fear what we cannot understand. We fear what we do not know. In darkness, there is great fear. In light, everything is clear. Krishna explains in the Gita that this knowledge is like the light that reveals everything in truth. Krishna is dispelling all fear of death, the ultimate fear of this whole creation. And if we hear it submissively, we can overcome the principle of death. So many people have tried to do it in so many ways, but all have failed. Through science, through technology, through various psychological, philosophical, or intelligent pursuits. There is a story Prabhupada would like to tell of a man who heard that at the time of death, Yamaraj comes to take you away from your body. And Yamaraj is a Brahmin. He's a very pious, noble soul. And Brahmins will never touch another person's stool. So if I cover my body with my own stool, Yamaraj will not touch me. And if I just stay in that condition, I never have to fear death. So he covered his body with his own stool without leaving an inch. This is how much he was fearing death. Of course, everybody else feared him. What type of life is it? People are so concerned with the quantity of life, they do not understand that there's a quality. That is what gives us fulfillment. But anyways, when his karmic time came to die, Yamaraj sent his Yamadutas and they took him away. Finished. So people have tried through so many brainstorms to overcome death. But everyone must die. Because it is physical nature. This material nature is janma mrityu jara vyadhi, birth, old disease, old age, disease, and death. But Krishna is revealing that transcendental wisdom which brings us beyond death to that eternally blissful, joyful state of eternal consciousness. He explains that the soul, the real person who is within the temporary residence of this material body, is part of him. And it is the soul, the conscious force, that is the enjoyer and sufferer. The body is just a place, a field, where we either enjoy or suffer. Krishna explains it is the field of activity. But a dead body cannot enjoy, it cannot suffer. If you're alive and someone puts a match to you or just touches you with a candle, you go, ow, and you run away and you say, why have you done like that? But we were just a few days ago in Kashi and we were going by the burning ghats near the river Ganga and we saw so many bodies lined up to be burned, and people all around them weeping, crying. And then the relative takes a torch with fire and puts it right on the head of that body. And then the whole body gradually starts burning in flames. And that body doesn't say, ouch, doesn't move an inch to get away, doesn't tell, you're supposed to be my son. Why you are lighting my body on fire? Body says nothing. Why? Because there's no person. The body is dead. The body has always been dead. But when the soul lives within the body, it lives through the body. It doesn't give life to the body. It lives through the body. And that soul, Krishna is explaining, is eternally part of him. And in this material world, according to the conception of life that we have, just like air carries an aroma, in the same way, that conception carries our soul to another type of body. Srila Prabhupada explains, just like the fragrance of a flower, it is carried by the wind from one nose to another nose. In a similar way, our consciousness, our conceptions, our desires make up our particular condition of consciousness. And accordingly, at the time of death, we are transferred to another situation or environment. Some people are confused why there is so much variety within human civilization. Some people are so happy and some people are so miserable. Some people are so successful and some people try even harder and they fail. Someone hardly studies at all and gets top grades in their class, in their exam. Someone studies for months and months and fails. Why is this? It doesn't make sense. But Krishna explains that our intelligence, our abilities, all of our qualifications, disqualifications, all the success, failure, happiness, distress, everything is a product of our previous desires and the activities that we perform according to those desires. So we are responsible. Human form of life is meant to accept the real responsibility of bringing our consciousness to its highest possible state. A dog is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending very nicely. If that is our conception of life, to enjoy such things, that it is very likely that at the time of death, that very conception will carry us to the body of a dog. Where do you think dogs come from? They come from that type of consciousness. Krishna provides the body according to what you deserve through material nature. If we have very godly attributes, if we are very much philanthropic, very good, we can actually get a body of a demigod in the heavenly planets. But if we become Krishna conscious, if we become conscious of our original natural relationship with Krishna, then we take no more birth in this material world, but we attain the supreme destination and regain our eternal spiritual body with Krishna. And that is the perfection, the goal of this human existence. So we should make sure that in every aspect, in every stage of our life, we are very carefully trying to cultivate that consciousness which is the only thing that will remain at the time when this body falls. And one who has that consciousness is considered Narottam, is considered the best amongst men. The Shastras explain that such a person should not be in any way designated by any material conception. A person who is a true devotee of the Lord, who is using this human birth to aspire in the line of surrender to the Lord, is the highest of the high in human civilization. It is called a Vaishnava. It is said, Archai Vishnu, that one who considers a Vaishnava according to any particular caste or creed, according to any designation of this world, his mentality is hellish. It is in ignorance. There's a beautiful story in this regard. When Sripad Ramanujacharya was living in this world, he had several Shiksha Gurus who were his godbrothers, disciples of Jamunacharya, and who he very much worshipped and looked up to. Because great devotees, one of their greatest attributes is how they honor, respect, and worship other Vaishnavas. A person who is appearing to be a great Vaishnava, but does not worship, honor, and respect other Vaishnavas, and seek spiritual inspiration from other Vaishnavas, is not really very advanced at all, according to our understanding that the scriptures are giving us, and according to the moods of the great acharyas of the past. Ramanuja Acharya, so many of his godbrothers he worshipped, he respected, he took guidance and inspiration from, even though he was the greatest acharya at the time. One of them was named Mahapurna. Mahapurna was a grihastha, but he was a spiritual master with many wonderful, illustrious disciples. And the news came to Sri Rangam, and Ramanujacharya had heard that Mahapurna was under great controversy, because he did something which was completely against the traditional codes of Dharma. A devotee who was a Sudra had died, and that person had no son. So Mahapurna himself performed the funeral ceremony and personally put the fire on that person's body and did the last rites. So the whole neighborhood was outraged that he was a Brahmin and he was performing the rites for a Shudra. He touched the body of a Shudra. They were so angry at him, so embarrassed by what he had done. In fact, all of his relatives rejected him and left him. He was an old man at the time. And his daughter, Atulai, who lived in another village, she left her father-in-law's house just to come to take care of her father, Mahapurna, because all the other relatives and family members rejected him because he performed the last rites for a Shudra. So Ramanujacharya was very confused why he did like this. So Ramanuja went and he came before Mahapurna and he said, "Please tell me, everyone's rejected you. And according to the Dharma Shastra, a Brahmin is not supposed to do this to a Shudra. Why did you do it? Can you explain?" And Mahapurna said, "Yes. I know that according to the Dharma Shastra tradition, a Brahmin cannot do such a thing for a Shudra. He loses his caste. But real Dharma is what the great personalities established in their lives. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. The highest dharma of true religion is established by the conduct of the great personalities." And Lord Sri Ramchandra, he was of such a high order of life. He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Jatayu was a bird. Not only was Jatayu a bird, but he was a vulture, which is considered the lowest amongst birds. And yet, when he died, Ramchandra did not see that this is a vulture. Ramchandra saw that this is a devotee. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally, himself, performed the last rites for Jatayu. And he personally put his body on fire. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, he is Dharmaraj. He is the very king of Dharma. He is the emblem of the highest Dharma. And yet, who did he worship? Of everyone on earth, besides Krishna himself, he worshipped Vidura. He took prasad at the house of Vidura. He took guidance from Vidura. And Vidura was a Shudra. He was a low class. So if Lord Ramchandra and Yudhisthira saw through the external body designations and saw a person's devotion and treated him accordingly, that is the highest principle of religion. That is above all these sentimental karmakanda traditions, which are also recommended in the shastras. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Because it is said in the shastra that the highest religion is to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. And then Mahapurna spoke with a very humble and sincere voice. He said, "This person that died, that I conducted funeral for, this person may have been a Shudra, but he was a devotee. And he was such a devotee that he was thousands and thousands of times more devoted to Lord Narayan than myself. So I personally consider it the greatest fortune in my life to have the right to offer this final service to such a great saint." And when Ramanujacharya heard these words, he offered his prostrated obeisances to Mahapurna and he begged forgiveness for the doubt that was in his mind. He said, "You are the embodiment of real Dharma. You are teaching the world the highest Dharma. Respect, not just for the physical condition for a person, but for the quality of one's consciousness. If you die a Brahman, if you die a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Shudra, if you die a sannyasi, or a grihastha, or a brahmachari, or a anything of these orders, it is not taken into serious consideration. The only thing that is considered is your consciousness. Do you actually have the consciousness of a Brahman? Pure, free from desire, equal to all, simple, clean. What is your consciousness?" That is how Krishna, who is seated within everyone's heart, will determine our condition of life. Sri Advaitacharya, that great avatar who appeared as the devotee of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was once asked by Lord Chaitanya, "Please ask for any benediction and I will grant it." And Advaitacharya said, "My Lord, there's nothing I want." The story behind this is Lord Chaitanya called Advaita to come and allowed him to worship him, wash his feet, and offer arti and so many other wonderful acts of love. And after doing so, Lord Chaitanya told Advaita, "Please dance in kirtan." And Sri Advaitacharya began to dance ecstatically in kirtan, so ecstatically. Sometimes when he was dancing, he was so graceful, and sometimes his body was trembling and his feet appeared to make the earth tremble. Sometimes he would put grass between his teeth and he would smile and he would laugh. And in this way he was dancing ecstatically as the devotees were chanting the holy names. And everyone so much felt transcendental bliss to sing the wonderful dancing of Sri Advaita. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after some time, he told him, "Please, ask me some benediction." And Advaitacharya replied that, "Today you allowed me to dance for you, and that is the fulfillment of all my life's desires. I have nothing else to be attained." We should have this in mind when we are in kirtan. Sri Advaitacharya's foremost desire of life was just to dance for the pleasure of the Lord in the kirtan of the holy name. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he insisted, "Please, ask for something else." And Advaitacharya, he said, "Yes, I will ask for something else. That through your holy name, through the holy name of Krishna, let all living beings attain pure, unmotivated, uninterrupted love of Krishna. Let even the lowest, even the uneducated, even the Shudras, even the Chandalas, the dog eaters, let them all dance in the ecstasy of your kirtan and achieve the perfection of life of Krishna Prema." He said, "And those people who are so proud of their high birth and high education, who are so proud of their big wealth, let them suffer birth after birth in this world. because they are not willing to humble themselves to your devotees, and they are not willing to humble themselves to call out your holy name. So here we find how the great personalities, they will judge us by the quality of our consciousness. There are so many wonderful examples in this regard. And at the time of death, Krishna, who is the Paramatma, seated within our heart, listening to every word we say through our life, watching every act we perform in our life, he is the one that will judge us. You can cheat the people of this world. You can even cheat the king, the prime minister, the greatest people in this world. But you cannot cheat Krishna, because he is all-pervading and all-knowing in his knowledge. So therefore, Krishna is explaining in this chapter of the Gita how very important it is to purify our consciousness, to live by the right means. Religion doesn't simply mean to learn some theological philosophy. It means to change the very quality of our life, the way we think. Sometimes we have seen people who are giving big, big lectures. In India I have met and experienced. In the West I have also. Thousands of people come to them for spiritual teachings. They're very learned. They're very powerful. But yet, they perform the same lowly activities as anyone else. They are smoking cigarettes. Sometimes they are drinking alcohol. Sometimes they are engaging in illicit activities with the opposite sex. Sometimes they are just greedy for more and more and more money. Sometimes they are very, very, very offended when they are insulted or when their prestige is in any way disturbed. So what is the difference between that and anybody in this world, even lowly people of this world? The quality of their consciousness is no better. Therefore, they are not qualified to teach. Even if they speak very good words, there will be no spiritual potency. Because Krishna empowers us to speak according to the quality of our surrender to him, according to the purity of our consciousness. I remember one time in Vrindavan, one man, he knew the entire Mahabharat, Srimad Bhagavat, and Ramayana by memory. And people would come up to him and say, 8th canto, 21st chapter, text number 62. And within an instant, he would chant the sloka. And if you have the Bhagavatam, it was always the right sloka. Mahabharat, Bhishma Parva, chapter 20, text 137. Within a second, he recites. What type of memory? And he was giving wonderful lectures. He could speak so nicely. And when he wasn't giving lectures, I would see him at sweet shops, eating sweets all day long. And I asked him, why you eat sweets all day long? He said, that's my life. So that's why I give lectures, to get money to eat all these sweets. That's why I recite, that's why I learned all these verses. It's my business. And this is my enjoyment. I am entitled. No doubt, he is entitled. He has the money, so he's entitled. But the consciousness quality was the same as most people of this world, just trying to enjoy, not the quality of real surrender. So we must judge by this. And this is the real purpose of Sanatan Dharma, to transform the quality of our life. A life of compassion, a life of sacrifice, a life of the highest morality, and most of all, a life of unalloyed, unmotivated devotion to the Supreme Lord, to Krishna. And when one attains this stage, Krishna explains, antakale chamam eva smaran matva kalevaram. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tajajyante kalevaram. That when one thinks of me at the time of death, he will attain me without fail. Man manabhava mad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskaru. Mami vaishashi satyante prati jani priyoshi. Krishna says, always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage to me. In this way you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my dear friend. Krishna says nothing about whether our body is healthy or diseased. Krishna says nothing about whether we're man or woman. Krishna says nothing about whether we're high caste or low caste or Indian or foreign. He says nothing about whether we're rich or poor. He says nothing of whether what our occupation is. He speaks only of our consciousness. If you are thinking of me, and if your life is worshiping me, which means following my directions, and you are bowing down in great humility, then you will come to me without fail. And that is the perfection, the goal of life. So we should aspire to associate with those persons who have the aspiration of that ideal in their life. And we should become intimate relations with such people, because by such association, the doors to liberation are opened in our own life. Mahat sevam dwaram ahuravam uktes tamodwaram yoshita sangi sangha. The Bhagavad explains that by associating with great souls who have this conception, this ideal, this consciousness, the doors to the highest goals are opened. Tamodwaram yoshita sangi sangam. But by associating with those persons too much attached to their egoistic pursuits of selfish gratification, the doors to lower and lower grades of existence are opened before us. Even if they are in the guise of saviors or great educators, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that the highest state of consciousness is that consciousness where we are so pure, in such a state of humility, that our only aspiration is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Gopi Bharatura Padakamalayora Dasa Dasanudas Trinarapi Sunichena Tadorapi Sahishnana Amani Namana Dena Kirataniya Sadahari. These are the persons that even the Lord himself worships, and all those who are intelligent will worship the lotus feet of one who is more humble than a blade of grass, one who is more tolerant than a tree, one who is ready, willing, eager to offer all respects to others and expects no respect for oneself. Such a person can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. It is that quality that we aspire for. It is that quality that we want to recognize and worship in others. It is that quality, when we worship and aspire, that we attract Krishna. There is no other quality that attracts Krishna. You can attract your wife or your husband. You can attract your friends. You may even be able to attract some of your god brothers and god sisters. You may be able to attract your business partners. You may be able to attract so many people within this society. Svavid varaho strakaraya shamshtuta purusha pashu. Bhagavat says in this society, men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, they worship people who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. And it is true. So with your with all various types of qualities, you attract various types of people. A person who's very, very strong attracts people who want to be very strong. A person who's very scholarly doesn't attract people who want to be strong. They attract people who want to be great scholars. A person who is a great cricket player is attracted to cricket fans. They're not attracted to scientists. So according to whatever qualities we have, if we're a big, big criminal, we attract other big, big criminals or smaller criminals. And politicians, what they do to attract people. But if we want to attract God, there is only one way. Trinadapi sunichena, tadorapi suhishnana, amanina manadena, kirtaniya sadahari. To be more humble than a blade of grass, to be more tolerant than a tree, to be ready to offer all respect to others, to find great joy and love and fulfillment in offering respect to others, especially for others who have the right aspiration in life, and to expect no respect for oneself, and in this mood to chant Krishna's holy name. And if we can chant the holy name offenselessly, purely in this humble state of mind, then it is guaranteed that that conception of life which is explained here in Gita will bring us to the lotus feet of Krishna eternally. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? One day his guru came and offered his prostrated obeisances to his, Ramanuja was the Shiksha disciple. And Ramanuja's guru came and offered prostrated obeisances to Ramanuja. And the people around, especially Ramanuja's own disciples, were thinking, why is he offering obeisances to his disciple? And why is it that Ramanuja is allowing him to offer obeisances to him? So they asked Ramanujacharya, why are you allowing your guru to offer prostrated dandavats to you? And Ramanuja said, because I'm his servant. And I know whatever he's doing must be for the ultimate good of everyone. And how can I doubt him? And then they asked Guru, it's Mahapurna, in fact, said, why you are offering your prostrated obeisances to your own disciple.